You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
It can wake you up from a deep sleep, that sound that fills your soul with terror. Your cat's about to hurl. Where's it going to land? On the easy-to-clean floor, under the couch, or on your freshly cleaned carpet? If you're really lucky, it's on your bed or pillow. Cats and vomit seem to go paw in paw. Must be those pesky hairballs for which they're notorious. One of Pet Doctor's favorite guests is back with us today, Dr. Jane Brunt, Catalyst Executive Director. We're going to be chatting about the facts and fictions of hairballs in cats. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Listen, cat people, it's just litter. Until you realize those big boxes mean big smells, big messes, and big money. Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter with concentrated power. It guarantees less smells, less work, all with less litter. Try the small bag that lasts one cat 30 days and you'll realize it's just litter, unless it's World's Best Cat Litter. Find it at Target, Walmart, and at your local grocery and pet stores.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Brunt, thanks for being with us. I know that was kind of a different introduction, but thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for bringing it up.
Oh, very good. All right. For those that may not are familiar with your background, tell us a little bit about Dr. Jane Brunt and Catalyst.
Jane Brunt is a cat veterinarian who is passionate about the health and welfare of pet cats and all cats, really. And I have owned a cat-only practice hospital in Baltimore, Maryland for 30 years now. It was the first in Maryland, and really enjoy connecting with cats and their cat caregivers and really the one-on-one in the office. There's nothing more rewarding than to have a conversation, whether it's about hairballs and the myths around that or about just keeping Delilah healthy. Delightfully healthy. About 8 years ago, there was some data released about the declining numbers of cats visiting veterinarians. And even though cats outnumber dogs as owned pets in households, the difference in the level of care they receive is really striking. So with that in mind, the Catalyst Council was formed as a coalition that really cuts across all channels to work together to raise the health, welfare, and value of companion cats. And we know that there are lots of opportunities to help cats and their owners, and we've been working together with not only veterinary organizations, but companies, and the sheltering community, in fact, has become an important part of the delivery of cat information and cat health and cat welfare. So that's what Catalyst Council is about, and thank you for this opportunity to share some of the myths about cats, because they're great pets.
I totally agree, and I have three. I've had dogs, and there's just something about a kitty. I've got one on my lap right now, and it just brings that blood pressure down, and I love it. But you're so right, Dr. Brunt, that too many times, you know, a dog will come in, and it seems like it's been off for a day. You know, it's just not meeting me at the door and wagging its tail and doing everything else. And then too many times it seems as though that cat walks through the door and it's on its last paw, and or it's a cat, you know, when was the last time your cat was seen? Oh, about 12 years ago. It's like, really? completely okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just an indoor cat and it's just fine. And I'll tell people, you know, when a cat is sick, what does it do? Sleep. And what does a cat do when it does feel good? Sleep. And what does it do when it's not feeling good? Sleep. So they're really good at hiding their signs of illness. So thank you for having Catalyst.
Truly, truly. Their signs of illness are very hard to recognize. So that's why your listeners and your audience, Dr. Cruz, is really well educated. And I thank you for bringing this information, like all your information out to us, to the consumer and the pet loving and owning public.
All right, let's get to the fun stuff. Vomiting and cats and hairballs. Yes, it does seem to go, you know, one goes with the other. They vomit. You know, a dog vomits every once in a while. It's like, that must be abnormal. But a kitty vomiting, people just seem to discount it, that it's not important. Oh, even if I didn't see a hair coming up, it must be hairball. Or they see a little bit of vomit. What is a hairball, and why do cats get them?
Well, first of all, you're right. Chronic vomiting is very common in cats, so common that people think that it's normal when in fact it's not. What's common is chronic GI disease from a variety of reasons. And I like to tell people that cats groom normally and they swallow their hair as a course of that grooming. You know, their little tongues are like those special grooming implements and they swallow that. And if the gut is normal, if the GI tract is normal, that hair should be able to pass right out of the stomach, all the way through the intestines, and out into the stool. And for those of you who have ever dissected a normal bowel movement of a cat, in fact, you'll see hair in it. So when a true hairball, the thing that looks like a Tootsie Roll, you know, and it has what looks like saliva, gastric juices over it, when that is found on the floor and comes up, well, first of all, sometimes you have to look and see, is that a bowel movement or is that a hairball? And, you know, sometimes you have to smell it to know.
That's a true owner that does that, yes.
Right, right. Well, and usually you pick it up with toilet paper and flush it regardless. But the concern is that it's not normal. And if it is balling up in the stomach, then there's a reason for that. That is either related to excessive shedding or a skin problem, or in most cases, some kind of intestinal problem, usually a small intestinal problem.
And if somebody
happy to go into those, there are.
We will.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's kind of fun, you know, there's always a medical term for everything. And if you're playing Scrabble and you're looking for that word that is, let's see, 12 letters long, contains a Z, the word, Dr. Brunt, for the hairball?
Oh, trichobezoar. Thank you for that hint.
That is such a great word. I mean, yes, when veterinarians say your cat has a trichobezoar, you know, we can charge more instead of saying that it's just a hairball. But what other species get hairballs? It seems like it's only cats we ever talk about.
Oh, in fact, even the ruminants do. And when we were going through veterinary school, you might have remembered learning that ruminants, the cloven-hoofed animals with four F-O-U-R stomachs, they can get hair and cause obstructions, as can horses get trichobezoars. And many veterinary schools happily display these large masses that are made of hair. So even in those species, it's not normal. And in cats, who are notoriously wonderful self-groomers, they're very common. But it does bespeak to underlying disease. And that's why it's important for people to know that hairballs aren't normal.
All right. How many hairballs are cats allowed to still call normal? One a week?
Yeah.
One a year?
That's a very good question. And oftentimes, because there's a continuum of frequency in it and it's an ever-expanding, I generally use the rule of thumb that if your cat is vomiting once or twice a year or even once every season, you know, okay. But then as it progresses, as it almost always does, and you're starting to see it once a month, twice a month, and then, you know, in the severe cases, they'll come in, the owners will bring them in, and they're vomiting more than once a week, then that's been a progressive, ongoing thing for some time. So that's when you really have to get serious about discovering the problem. But even before that, educating people about, if this is something that's problematic and ongoing, we need to try and figure out what to change or what to do before it progresses to something more serious.
Which breeds are more at risk? You know, you would seem that it's going, or I should say, what breeds, what ages are more at risk? It seems common sense. Yes, it's those long hair Persian cats with those great coats that, oh my goodness, that fur is going to get stuck in those little exfoliating tongues of theirs.
So any of the long haired cats, especially if they have a dense undercoat, are going to swallow more hair. Of my three short hair cats, one that is of most concern is the oldest, and in fact, he has been worked up for it, including biopsies to determine the nature of his problem, and right now it's just inflammatory, so we're managing that from that knowledge perspective, and that's what's really important, is to find out what's going on down there to cause it.
So, you know, here you're saying biopsies, and people are probably listening going, this is just a cat that's spitting up. You know, that seems to be overkill for just a vomiting cat. So what, define what is vomit, if you could, Dr. Brunt?
Of course. Vomit is the reverse. It comes from the stomach or below, compared to regurgitation, which is contents that come from the esophagus before it reaches the stomach. And if there is vomit that happens to have a little hair in it, that's one of the challenges, is that people think that that's a hairball, that the vomiting is occurring because of hairballs, because they see a few flecks of hair in it, when in fact the vomiting is being caused by something else. And it's not to say that on day one my cat's been vomiting once a month or even once a week, day one, that we need to biopsy. Certain steps along the way, we start with the easy things. Number one, making sure your cat has been checked for intestinal parasites and is on regular preventive for that. Because even if they don't go outside, cats are at risk for getting certain types of parasites. And those are, include intestinal parasites from various sources that you don't think about, the bugs that come inside and soil and plants, and you know how much cats love to chew plants. So those are sources for cats, even if they never step outside, if they're truly indoors cats, that can be a source of intestinal parasites. So making sure those fecal tests, which usually are done once a year anyway, are taken care of and negative, and the parasite prevention is being done on a regular, usually a monthly basis, now that they're really good and effective general parasite control methods for internal parasites.
And some, no, Dr. Brunt, that are really easy to give, so you don't have to go, oh my goodness, I'm not going to be sticking a pill down my cat's throat. There's even liquids now that you can apply to the skin that will take care of internal parasites, so it's so much easier.
Exactly. And that's something to check with your veterinarian, because those are a little different than the ones that you buy at the pet store or at some of the over-the-counter, you know, mass retailers, that they have some effective treatments for fleas, but you should always check with your veterinarian even about those, because some of those aren't the safest for cats. So for the internal parasites, the ones that would cause GI disease, definitely check with your veterinarian on what's the easiest for your pet, because it's different for different pets, and what's going to be the best to use. So that's a very kind of baseline starting point for making sure that the vomiting isn't related to that.
I'd kind of like to go through a checklist of all the various things that can cause vomiting, some that seem straightforward. Yes, you're talking about intestinal disorders, so digestive problems. You're talking about biopsies. One of the common diseases is inflammatory bowel disease, and I tell people it's kind of similar to Crohn's disease that people get. And one of the hardest things, trying to find the cause, even with biopsies, sometimes they'll just say, boy, it looks like inflammatory bowel disease, but what's causing it, doctor? Well, we'll work on that one because we can't tell you specifically from that biopsy. But the continuum of inflammatory bowel to cancer, I'd love to have you chat about that a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the real important take home, is that even if you find, and I hope if you have to get to a point where there's a biopsy needed, even if the cat owner finds that it's inflammatory bowel disease, well, that's something to celebrate, because that's something that we can manage with anti-inflammatory medications, be they cortisone or other steroids or other kinds of medications that reduce the inflammation. Because the risk is in not treating the inflammation, even if you can't find the cause, and then having the chronic repeated inflammation go down the path toward GI lymphoma, in most cases small cell lymphoma, but in other cases, which is manageable, in other cases more serious types of GI cancer. And in the early stages, even that can be, even with biopsies, that can be a little bit hard to detect. So knowing that information helps the pet owner and helps the veterinarian be better for intervening earlier and trying to get to the root of the problem so it doesn't progress.
When I've told some of my clients that my concerns are, is this inflammatory bowel because it's been going on now for quite a while, or has it progressed into cancer and all the various testing that's available for that, they look at me as like, how could something like inflammation cause cancer? And the simplistic analogy I have is, here I am in Southern California. We have a gorgeous beach. You go out there and you get that suntan time after time after time. Well, sometimes you get a burn. Your body usually forgives you. You might get a little bit leathery skin, but if you do it long enough and you're unfortunate enough, you can get skin cancer because of that. And they go, oh, now I understand.
That's a really good analogy, because that they can see, where the vomiting and the internal inflammation, you know, it's a little more behind closed doors, under wrap, if you will.
Under fur, yes.
Exactly, exactly. But that brings up another avenue that I always like to, especially in the early stages, like to explore, and that's the possibility of some antigen, some diet protein causing an immune stimulation, and almost like an allergic reaction of the GI tract.
Hold that, let's tease, so make sure everyone comes back after this short break, because people changing diets on their cats happens all the time, as you well know. So let's talk about it right after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Active4Pets is a new wellness platform and app that helps pet parents save time and money on their vet bills. Stop paying for unnecessary vet treatments. Consult with a vet online. Get unlimited access to your pet's entire health history from any computer or smartphone with the Active4Pets app. Vaccinations, medications, test results, and more. Active4Pets gives you access to a team of expert vets for non-emergency care. Make an appointment before, during, or after office hours. Skip the waiting room and get a secure online vet consult on your schedule. Taking care of your pets is as easy as it gets with Active4Pets. Ready to try Active4Pets? Listeners get 40% off a one-year membership. To get this great offer, use promo code PETLIFE on the sign-up page of active4pets.com. That's A-C-T-I-V, the number 4, P-E-T-S.com. Or call 888-512-2848.
Hey everybody, this is Tim Link, the host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Got some exciting news for you here today. My audiobook is now available. Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail, is now available in audiobook form through Audible.com, Amazon.com, and iTunes. It's a collection of 32 conversations I've had with the animals. It's a fun, interesting, heartfelt book that's suitable for all age groups. So everybody, pick up a copy of the audiobook, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Brunt, Catalyst organization is marvelous. This information that you're bringing out to people on something that seems so simple, like, oh, that vomiting cat must be the hairball. You were talking right before the break about diet, and people come in, what are you feeding? Because your cat's been vomiting. Oh, I went from this food to this food to this food to this food, or I went to grain-free food because that is what I was told at the pet store is going to be the best thing for the kitty. Please enlighten us about diets and cats and vomiting.
Oh boy, that's
a whole show.
And then some. The reality is that any protein can trigger an immune reaction. That's like some people are allergic to bee stings and walnuts, and they can get allergic reactions to more than one thing. But sometimes in food intolerances in cats, it's something that happens over a period of time. So it's not necessarily that they change the food and introduce something new. It could be that the cat's been eating Fantasies all its life and all of a sudden it's vomiting. And it's not necessarily, probably even, that it's too fancy feast in general. It's probably a sensitivity, a hypersensitivity or an allergy, a food allergy that's developed to commonly fish, commonly dairy products, commonly chicken and beef. Those are the categories that are commonly found when there is a true food hypersensitivity. And we think that's in about 10% of these vomiting cases. And in that case, doing testing, blood testing certainly is a little less specific, but what can be done is introducing a diet that is made up entirely of protein sources that the cat has never, ever been exposed to in the past. So it's not as simple as going to grain-free or something that you might get at the pet store. You need to talk to your veterinarian and do the research about, you'll find us having diets like venison and green peas and duck and sweet potato and things like, you know, you're kind of, as a cat owner, scratching your head, why would I ever feed that? And the truth of the matter is if the cat is already allergic to, say, fish and dairy, then just switching foods around isn't as easy and straightforward as if you go down the path of trying to do novel or new protein introduction. And that takes about 6 to 8 weeks. So I tell people, 2 months. Let's give this 2 months on this new food, nothing else, no treats, no milk. And I'm guessing that the people with multiple cats or cats and dogs in their household or kids are saying, ooh,
that's tough.
It is hard.
And what is so frustrating, you look at a can of food and it may say chicken dinner or beef flavored or fish delight. And then there still may be chicken in there and there still may be beef in there. So even reading the front of the label isn't always as important as actually reading the ingredient list.
Exactly. So there are lists of what's out there, and then once you identify, typically what happens is that, and there are also diets that are called hydrolyzed protein, which I really like because they seem to be more universally accepted. And hydrolyzed is a fancy word for, let's chop up the protein. So instead of this giant protein molecule, the cat's body saying, oh, I recognize that. I've got to cause an inflammation in response to it. This hydrolyzed protein is a lot smaller, but it still contains all the nutrition, and the body doesn't recognize it as being foreign. So you can use things like chicken to make a hydrolyzed protein hypoallergenic diet. And there are a couple of those available on the market in both canned and dry. But, you know, at the end of the day, the cat's got to eat, and we've got to figure out how best to feed it.
And then sometimes you do have those picky cats. It can be so challenging to get switched over to something else. Let's talk about some of the other causes of vomiting. So, okay, you want to say it's the intestinal tract, you know, most commonly. But we also know that there's other internal organs that can cause issues, like liver and kidneys, pancreas, gallbladder. With that first workup, yes, checking that stool sample, so important. But oftentimes I'll say, you know, I want to run a general blood and urine panel to check for internal issues. Like, oh, my cat's just fine, it's vomiting. Talk a little bit about the liver, the kidneys, the pancreas.
And the thyroid, too, because that's one of the most common organ dysfunctions that we see, and that regularly causes vomiting. And so checking those different levels on initially just a general comprehensive panel, chem screen you might call it, or general health profile, or different labs do have different names, but you want to get a cross-section of blood sugar to check for diabetes and liver enzymes and the different proteins, and as well as a blood count, because they're could be infection or inflammation that gives you a clue with the blood count. So that's a good basic starting point that's non-invasive.
And then, doing it routinely before they start having problems, too, is great.
Sure, because then you have a baseline, and then you can follow the trends. Chronic kidney disease. Kidney disease is one of the most common progressive ailments that cats get. And when we can get a baseline when they're young adults, say 2, even earlier than that, if we're going to get lab work before they're spayed or neutered, or dental at the age of 2 or 3 when they need it at first, then you've got the baseline, and then you can follow that through the years. And having that really best is that annual trend, if there's not a problem, to follow it annually and then see if there's any change in the kidney values and what you see in the urinalysis. And then to add to that, Dr. Cruz, I'll say that there are some very nice, what we call GI, gastrointestinal panels that labs will offer to give some more insight into specifically into GI disease, not necessarily what the cause of it is.
I mean, there's so many things that can cause issues, even neurological problems. So if your cat has a brain tumor, horrible, horrible to say, that can cause vomiting, poisoning. Different things. You were talking earlier about cats loving to eat plants. Somebody gives you a plant for a holiday, or you just see this gorgeous plant at the nursery. And there's so many times, you know, I'm looking at, you know, what's the light requirements for this and what's the water requirements. Sadly, it seems, I don't think I've ever seen a notation saying that something is poisonous to a cat or a dog.
Yeah, and that's a tough one. I think you're very good, and other media specialists are very good at, during the holiday seasons, to put out the warnings. And of course, the ASPCA has the Poison Control Center, and there are lots of lists of what's toxic and what could just be a gastric irritant. Case in point would be the poinsettia, which isn't really poisonous, but it can cause vomiting. So yes, swallowing plants. And I, you know, honestly, I have to ask those questions sometimes in the context of thinking, is the cat chewing the plant because it has a little, already has an upset stomach and it's trying to quell the nausea on its own? Mm-hmm. Or is the plant that it's eating the culprit? And so sometimes it's a which came first situation with plants. And I have to add that so toxic are the Easter lilies and members of the lily, L-I-L-Y family, is that they, when cats ingest even the powder from the stamen or chew on the leaves, they can get a very life-threatening, irreversible acute kidney disease. So keeping those plants, being aware of that, especially during the holidays, and keeping those plants high or not even bringing them into your home to prevent that acute vomiting.
Definitely so much safer. Constipation. This just seems like, how can something at that end cause problems at the other end? But I think, as I'll, you know, sometimes tell people, they're just so full of it. There's no more room. And what caused the constipation in the first place? But constipation is a real problem for too many cats. Seems in my hands that I see many more of the senior kitties coming in with the issue, and they go from constipation to constipation gone horrid, ostipation. Mm-hmm. It's not a great subject to talk about. Hopefully nobody's trying to eat right now, but Dr. Brunt, could you address constipation, ostipation?
Really. And again, it's a progressive kind of problem that when your veterinarian examines your cat, one of the things that they're doing is feeling the diameter of the colon that it's storing and propelling the feces, which should, in a normal cat, come out with the diameter of perhaps your finger and be normal little logs. And if the cat's having trouble, or gee, initially they're a little bit bigger than, or the veterinarian, when the veterinarian feels, gee, this colon feels kind of full, and tell me more about the bowel movement habits. Because what happens as they age is a couple things. The motility can have a problem, the motility of the normal peristalsis of the GI tract to help keep things moving can slow down. And so the fecal material that ends up in the colon just doesn't move out as normally and as readily. And cats, especially if they have kidney disease, tend to dehydrate. more easily. So when you have feces that's starting to back up in the colon because it's not getting moved out, and the body trying to continue to absorb water to maintain its proper fluid balance, especially in chronic kidney disease cats that are losing fluid from their kidneys, then
even though they're drinking like crazy.
Yeah, because they're just losing it in their kidneys and in their urine. So what can happen is that you can get this, I call them tomato juice can-sized size colon backed up and filled with big, huge, long
German shepherd-sized poop. Yes, exactly.
And you have to be very careful reversing that, where we used to think that they had to be sedated and start doing tons of enemas and breaking them down. And now we know it's much safer for the cat to do things more gradually and hydrate them and have them hospitalized and be on fluids and slowly try to trickle some stool softeners through a nasal tube and just gradually to get that big old honking obstipated fecal mass out without day one just sedating and trying to remove it, break it down and remove it.
And once you get it out, there's always too great of a chance of it reforming. Medications help, but it seems like that poor little colon has been so terribly stretched out of shape. You were talking, Dr. Brunt, about using enemas, and people like to conserve money. And I know many times if I had a child that were constipated, I'd just go to the pharmacy, I'd pick up an enema, and I'd give my child an enema, and life would be back to normal. Life is good. What are the concerns about somebody doing that?
Yeah, because the phosphate enemas that are widely available for people are very toxic to cats. And so here again is a situation where you're just trying to help your little kitty, and you think, for one thing, straining for having a bowel movement looks an awful lot like straining to try and pass urine in a blocked kitty. So that is really critical, that if you see your cat in and out of the litter box, excessive licking, posturing to try and have some kind of elimination, call your veterinarian. That's even in the middle of the night, go to the ER, because if your cat is either blocked or obstipated, your cat needs to be medically managed as soon as possible, and that's not something that should wait. So yes, the phosphate enemas can cause the severe collapse and death in cats. So again, check with your veterinarian, and they can help you formulate the best medical management for as long as you can with certain kinds of stool softeners and certain kinds of diets and trying to keep low residue and trying to give things that help that peristalsis, to help keep that colon, keep things moving along. So those are cats that we watch very carefully, but can most often be successfully managed with just proper attention and medical care at home.
All right, another thing that can cause vomiting in cats, and so many things can do it. Thankfully, it seems to be much less common in cats than dogs. And I will say dogs like to eat first, think later. So intestinal foreign bodies. But cats can eat strange things. I love it. They have a competition amongst veterinarians yearly to send in photographs of the radiographs they've taken of the craziest things they've ever seen and removed. And it always seems to be dogs, large breed puppies, that have eaten things from socket wrenches to fishing poles to a toilet brush to something like 13 or 14 golf balls. With you having been in a solely cat practice for as many years as you have, what's some of the craziest things you pulled out of a cat?
Well, certainly the things that are insidious and around but happen are what we call the linear foreign body. So that's the myth about cats needing to play with string and yarn because they can swallow those. They don't mean to, but they're playing with them. And then they get caught on their barbed tongue and they swallow them. And that string or thread or yarn can work its way partly through the intestinal tract and then start to get lodged and saw its way through the intestinal tract. So that can cause vomiting and be very serious unless it's surgically, in almost all cases it needs to be surgically managed. But here's an interesting thing. Once, twice we've taken hair ties, children's hair ties, out of a cat's stomach that they were repeatedly swallowing hair ties. And in recent years, we've learned that that's a symptom of inflammatory bowel disease. We call it pica, of things that they'll swallow inappropriate things because of this inflammation and discomfort and nausea, and then they get a propensity for doing that. And so that's, again, the chicken or the egg, or what's causing the disease. Is it because the cat swallowed all this stuff and now it's vomiting? Well, yeah. Except the cat has underlying disease and it's swallowing this stuff and it's vomiting.
Is that why it's chewing on plastic or chewing on wool, things like this?
Yeah. Well, wool sucking it as a young habitual activity can be because they were weaned too early, or it can be in an obsessive compulsive disorder. And then those cats can swallow lots of things that are like wool and get obstruction. And what was the other thing you mentioned?
Plastic.
Yeah. Cats that lick photographs is a common one. They rarely eat enough to get them obstructed, but there are lots of cats that will pull thin plastic bags or destroy plastic bags and swallow some bags that are around, and that can cause an obstruction. Here again, now we're tuned into, well, we think if we have to remove something like that, we're going to biopsy that stomach at the same time, that stomach and small intestine at the same time.
Good idea.
Fortunately, people are, trying to keep their cats away from those. But when it is a repeated problem, find out why there's a problem.
All right. So now we know all these various things that can cause problems. Don't have a lot of time. We can go on for hours on each one of these subjects.
Yes.
But treatment. You mentioned brushing the cat. How about if you have this long hair cat, it doesn't like to be brushed. How about lion cuts? When you get that, you leave a long hair on the head, little paws in the tip of the tail.
Yeah, aren't they adorable? So put down, and that sometimes helps with them swallowing the hair. And
how about diets?
It can help and diets will, there's so much around hairball diet that it might, maybe the extra fiber might help vomiting, and that's always a path to take. And there are lots of anti-nausea medications that can be given to help allay some of the signs. That's frequently what we'll do when we find just inflammation, or if we need to try and treat the symptoms before we find the ultimate cause, is that we'll try a combination of things that include medication for anti-nausea and diet change, and maybe even a food trial first with hypoallergenic diets.
Sometimes people will think, again, we're getting back to hairballs. Oh, this is a hairball. I'm just going to give it some butter, or I'm going to give it some olive oil to help pass it through.
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem to help, though.
Well, butter and olive oil are absorbed by the gut, so they don't lubricate as effectively as, say, a petrolatum would help lubricate. Again, why does the hairball need to be lubricated to help it pass through? Sure, you can try those things, and there's a plethora of flavored petrolatum bases of different in the tube, and then foods that have some varying degrees of soluble and insoluble fiber to help draw fluid into the bowel to help hair and vomiting causes to pass through. So
the bottom line, it sounds like, see your doctor, see your veterinarian.
Yes, yep, get the professional help. It's more than Dr. Google. Dr. Google can't put their fingers on your cat's tummy.
Sounds wonderful. We've been chatting for the last half hour with Dr. Jane Brunt. She's the executive director of the Catalyst Organization, an executive council director. So thank you so much for being with us today. You always have wonderful information. So if you have that kitty that's spitting up, don't discount it. Make an appointment. See your veterinarian, even if it's just totally that indoor cat. Thank you so much, Dr. Brunt, for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you very much to my producer, Mark Winter. Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.